In this episode of The Mincing Rascals, the Rascals mince about the Lucas Museum, who will or won't attend the Republican National Convention, the dysfunction in Springfield, and they have a surprising pat on the back for someone.
Today is Friday. It's May 6th. Holy cow. This is John Williams, and welcome to another exciting edition of The Mincing Rascals. You can hear me Saturdays from 1 to 3 on WGN Radio.
I'm Eric Zorn from The Tribune, and I write a column you can read on Wednesdays, Fridays, and Sundays.
And I'm Krista McQuarrie. I write editorials and a column every other Friday that you can read in The Tribune. And today I'm right below Eric Zorn. Our pictures are
sharing.
Just, we're
by
neighbors.
That you mean in the newspaper, right?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay, I'll take it now. I'm Steve Bertrand, the host of the Business Lunch on WGN Radio, news anchor and host of Steve Bertrand on Books, the podcast at WGNplus.com.
Well, let's break from form, guys. We always start talking presidential politics, and you know who. We'll get to that quick enough, but just as fascinating to me this week, because I don't want to talk first about Donald Trump in a taco bowl, is the whole narrative art museum controversy in Chicago. And it kind of has a presidential tie that we'll get to in just a minute. But what is the general consensus? Does everybody agree with the Tribune editorial that the Friends of the Parks at least have some standing here? We ought to let this thing play out in court?
Well, if you don't agree with the editorial, you certainly should.
Did you write that one,
Kristen? I did not write that one. But, you know, the George Lucas and his wife kind of came out swinging this week. They view this as, you know, slapping away a huge investment, a gift to the city of Chicago. But there's law protecting the lakefront, and there just doesn't seem to be appetite among aldermen, among city residents at this time when the schools are about to go bankrupt. The teachers are talking about striking later this year. Crime is ratcheting up. A taxpayer-subsidized museum homage to George Lucas is just it's not popular. I don't see this actually happening. I think they're going to go elsewhere. What do you think?
Well, there's
two
things there, right? I mean, one is the cost that you're referring to. They give, what, $800 million, but then the city still has to put up, somebody's got to come up with another billion or so. But then it's the location issue, too, right? The Friends, I don't think, would be fighting it, would they, Kristen, as vigorously if it were on the other side of Lakeshore Drive?
I think they'd be welcoming it if
it were
on the other side of Lakeshore Drive. A lot of people have suggested that. You know, I kind of like the parking lot location. I thought that made some sense. You know, what was between Soldier Field and McCormick Place, this new idea where they're going to tear down McCormick Place East and replace it with this museum. And then that seemed like there were a lot of moving parts, a lot of finances, a lot of extra visitor taxes going into that. That didn't strike me that well. And my general sense is, look, George Lucas, we got some prime areas in this town where you could have a nice museum and a lot of visitors visit you. We don't want to give you our lakefront. Get lost.
Yeah, but he's got his heart set on a lakefront location.
Aww.
Eric?
I think sometimes there are stories that come up that the media gets all exercised about, and the politicians and the groups and things like that, that most people really don't even care about. And I think most people, I couldn't care less about a museum in any way, where it is or what it is. And I think this is one of those stories that is sort of media class driven, that most people they don't care.
Or maybe don't understand what it is. I mean, I know we've talked about that.
It's another museum that they won't go to. That's what it is.
Of narrative art. And I, despite everything that's been written about it, I still think people think it would be a Star Wars museum. Don't you, Steve? And
it's
whether
not.
Or not they go. I know. Well, I know. Well, you better go door to door.
Read the editorial page.
I want to rethink my position then.
I know, but I'm just saying, I think people see Lucas and they go to the Star Wars Museum. And it's not, I don't know if it's going to have Star Wars wing or not, but I don't think people are even clamoring for a museum
like
this.
There are all kinds of little interesting variables here. There's the whole thing of George Lucas, this guy from California coming in and taking part of our lakefront. There's a location. There's the mayor's involvement. I've found myself wondering what if this were like the Pro Football Hall of Fame, and they said, we're going to relocate from Canton, Ohio. We'd like to have a spot right here next to Soldier Field. I think the town would feel a lot differently about that. I don't think that there would be much less patience for the Friends of the Parks and this idea that the lakefront is, you know, must be, you know, somehow sanctified. You know, the truth is that we're sitting on land, I believe, that is former Lakeville, isn't it?
Oh, sure, absolutely.
Everything from Michigan Avenue.
Is
all like, we're all built on rubble, basically, that was reclaimed lakefront. So the idea that there's something sacred about reclaimed lakefront, I think it's like a lot of it, all this stuff is figuring into this general civic feeling like, now we're not sure we want to go there, but how about a spot like at the Michael Reese property right across Lakeshore Drive? How about some other places that are in town that are near the lake but aren't right on our lakefront?
Have you guys been to other big cities, though, that did not preserve their lakefronts?
Yes.
And
just about all of them.
Yeah.
Well, so that's why it's so precious, because not many big cities have done what we have done and made it public space and made it open space. And there is genuine concern that, you know, if you allow this proposal in, or so I disagree with you if it were the Pro Football Hall. I don't care what it is. I think there is a genuine interest in protecting and keeping the lakefront open.
Krista McQuarrie hates football.
No, but it's weird because
she didn't deny it. Did you see that?
She laughed.
She did not deny it.
But if it were the parking lot location, you know, south of Soldier Field, I mean, what would we be losing? But I find myself more on the principle side of this thing, that we take, you guys sound to me like you're taking the beautiful lakefront property in Chicago for granted. I don't think you should go down
the road.
Well,
Kristen is definitely on your side on this.
Oh, absolutely. But Steve doesn't seem to care. And I'm thinking, Steve, you should care.
I don't care that much. And
didn't you just hear me? I said, Steve,
yeah, I know.
You're supposed to care.
We've got a lot of.
This isn't North Park. This isn't North Avenue Beach.
No,
I mean, this is part of.
And even North Avenue Beach is a wonderful thing.
Well, that's the point.
I'm saying it's not North Avenue. It's North Avenue. If this were on North Avenue Beach, some sort of part of the lakefront, the part that's really unspoiled. This is part of an area of the lakefront that we have basically trashed since we put Soldier Field there in McCormick
this
Place.
This isn't going to keep anyone from enjoying the lakefront.
The Tribune is responsible for that location of McCormick Place East. I mean, these are not our current colleagues, obviously. This is back in the 60s, but the Tribune agitated really strongly to put that monstrosity right on the lakefront.
I don't think there'd be any great offense to the lakefront to put the museum there. I mean, very few people are down there at the lakefront anyway, right? That property.
Oh, sure. Used. No. But
It's unused. So why would we put something there that would be used?
It's a slippery slope thing. And by the way, Steve, doesn't it kind of bug you that, like Eric said, a billionaire from California comes to Chicago and says, I'll take that lakefront property there, when we so value
lakefront
I think
Eric's
property.
Term was taking the lakefront.
Our lakefront.
He's married to a Chicagoan, right? So he lives in Chicago quite a bit.
You know, and we can't have a conversation like this in Chicago if it really gets animated without introducing the race card. And there was George Lucas's wife saying that this will keep black and brown children from experiencing some beautiful art or something like that.
That was just so out of line, I thought. I mean, really, you're going to introduce the race card when we've been talking about all these issues, the law, protecting the lakefront, the fact that we can't afford it. I mean, she took all of the actual issues around this and tried to make it about race.
She should move it to Washington Park, right? They were going to put the Olympics there. Maybe the children could go to the museum if it was in Washington
Park. How about next to the Barack Obama Library, which is going to be in Lawndale?
Well,
I just wanted to ask one more question about this, which is the consequences to Mayor Emanuel right now, who's already reeling from all these various problems with the schools and crime, and suddenly he's got this, and it looks like he's going to fail. They've gone to federal court, right? They're looking They're going to the appellate court. They're trying, and they're going to get a ruling by next Wednesday. But most people who I've heard talk about this say it's a real long shot. And essentially, what they're asking for is for the Friends of the Park suit to be thrown out immediately, so that they can begin groundbreaking, essentially.
Yeah, because we know how fast these things get thrown up. If we miss that deadline in 4 weeks, the whole thing is shot, right?
Well, George Lucas, you know, he's 70 some years old, and I think he wants to get this project going. He doesn't seem to have. He doesn't.
Oh,
have,
exactly.
Oh, really?
Yes.
No. He has surprisingly little patience for this process right now.
You brought up the Football Hall of Fame, but do you think also people would be less opposed if George didn't look so smug?
Yeah, maybe. Maybe that's part of it, too. I think it is. I don't know. Kristen Decker, our producer of this podcast, was at a rally the other day, and she got the sense and was talking to me about it, that people are also seeing this as an extension of Rahm Emanuel. And so it really doesn't have any natural allies right now. They don't like Lucas for whatever reason. He's not, you know, what is... you know, what business is this of his, say? And then Rahm Emanuel isn't maybe the sort of person that Chicagoans are going to rally around on this expansion.
Well, Father Flager's behind it, and Jesse Jackson Sr. is behind it. And there are, and some community leaders, especially in the South Side and African-American community, are behind this. There's more.
They are meaningless. They are absolutely meaningless. And John is right that this is an extension of what people, you know, continually criticize the mayor for, is focusing on downtown, shiny baubles, not paying attention to neighborhoods that actually need, you know, serious economic development. And this is an extension of that. I mean, that's why he was in a runoff last year, for this exact reason.
And to get that kind of private investment, you still have to spend more than the private investment. I don't know that that's the best. I don't know. Is it financially viable, would you say?
No.
Is it a smart move for the city or state?
No.
So the governor is kind of vacillating on this, though. Am I right? He doesn't like the east side, but he's agreeable to the idea of it going where the parking lot is.
I think that's the Zorn position, yes.
Wow. Mark that
is more commonly known.
Yeah. Right.
But more interestingly, we'll segue now to the governor's position on Donald Trump in the Republican field, which is now Donald Trump. He said he's not going to be a delegate. He said he's not going to go to the convention, and he won't endorse Donald Trump. Bully for you, eh? Is there any risk for Governor Rauner and that, guys?
No.
I think you're going to see
Illinois voted for Trump.
Well, I don't think endorsements really matter. And I think you're going to see a lot of governors and other people saying the same thing. I support him, but I am not going to endorse him.
What does that mean? That I'm going to vote for him, but I'm not going to raise money for him?
Or I'm not going to, you know, fight against him.
I'm not going to stand on a dais with him and join hands together.
That's a complicit endorsement. I don't exactly understand that. To me, you either are in or you are out. And if you are not actively saying something against his candidacy, then that's an endorsement. Is that a fair assessment on my part?
I don't think that's fair. No, I think there's a vast difference between keeping quiet. The Bush family apparently is going to keep quiet about this. They're not going to say anything. And actually coming out and speaking. I mean, when you endorse a candidate, especially presidentially, you will go around to rallies. You will give introductions. You will help raise money. And there's a big difference between just like voting for somebody or not, or tacitly going along with the party that you're behind.
But Bob, I'm sorry.
Go ahead. No, I'm done.
Bob Dole will be the only living Republican presidential nominee at the convention.
Yeah, for the last five.
Right?
Think about that.
All
the
others are taking a pass.
Aren't
right.
even going to go. John McCain said this is going to create the political fight of my life in Arizona. And you know, Eric, you know how you introduced the Football Hall of Fame for our Narrative Art Museum conversation. Let me just introduce this, that the reason I say you're either in or out with the Trump nomination is because I think he is so bad and bad for America. He is our kind of Hitler, and you can't just stand on the sidelines when somebody or something is that bad. If you let it happen, then that's on you too. I think you have an obligation to work against it. And I know I'm speaking as a Democrat saying that about a Republican, so maybe that's not fair. But I got to tell you, when Cruz dropped out this week, I found myself, it was like a kick in the gut. I thought, holy cow, I don't know where I live anymore. Did anybody else have that reaction?
Well, no? It did. There was a sinking feeling, like, you know, the things we've been giggling about for 7 months now were true.
I think we'll have our laugh cry figured out, you know, by November. But I'm actually looking at it more just almost in an entertaining way, which maybe I shouldn't be. But the whole issue with him and his taco bowl, and I love his, you know, I have to laugh at it. There's no other reaction that I can muster at this point except...
On Cinco de Mayo, Donald Trump, not thinking this was condescending or pandering...
Or just ignorant.
Thought he was bridge building.
No, that's the amazing
thing, right?
The
outrage begins, yes.
He does. He's there in his tower over a taco bowl, and he tweets out, Happy Cinco de Mayo. The best taco bowls are made in Trump Tower Grill. I love Hispanics. I mean, that's the sort of thing The Onion would do. That's actually him.
No, The Onion wouldn't do it.
I was tweeting back and forth with Steve that, you know, there's National Burger Day is coming up, National Donut Day. He's going to be like, I love the Indians.
Well, that's
everybody
it.
Go get a donut.
What's the Chinese food and occasion? But he'll just find a way to sort of embrace all of these people.
He will. I mean, in all seriousness, he is going to start trying to make outreaches to these communities that he has offended. I'm guessing that for a running mate, he's going to pick somebody. He's going to either going to take a woman or he's going to take an ethnic minority of some sort. And there are certainly some in the
hinterlands
pool
or the
possibilities. Yeah, sure.
Well,
he's going to have to do that. I've seen a lot of analysis in the last few days of the electoral map and just the voting demographic map. And he's going to have to do better than Mitt Romney with a bunch of different constituencies, because he's going to do worse with Hispanic voters. He's probably going to do worse with Asian voters. Probably going to do worse with women and African Americans, but he's unless he can figure out someone, it's a really tight path he's going to try.
So do these absences from the convention and all that, will that have any impact on him? If Mark Kirk's not going to go, Bruce Rauner's not going to go,
no,
George Bush isn't going to go, no.
Kristen McQuarrie's going to go.
I'm going. And these are just really
as a reporter,
practices
I mean.
The great
yes.
the home of
yes,
Lincoln
as a reporter. Yeah. They're just, 4-day parties, basically. And it's not like the room is going to be empty. No one's going to notice who's not there.
Oh, I think the media story will be who's not there.
The liberal media, and that's the mainstream media.
It's going to be really interesting. One thing that I'm sure Kristen's going to cover, every morning they have a delegation breakfast, right? The Illinois delegation, typically led by the governor,
clink,
who's not going to be there. And this being a blue state, Mark Kirk isn't going to be there. Who is going to be there from Illinois, and what are they going to be saying? Because they've got to be careful about, Illinois is going to go for Hillary Clinton. There's probably little doubt about that. But they've got to be careful about some of these down ballot races that they're in. If you've got some of these state reps, these people who always go to these things serving as delegates and putting on their funny hats and dropping balloons, it's kind of a serious matter now. Who are you behind and why? And, the balance of power, or certainly certain elements of balance of power in Springfield, it hangs in the balance in the election in November. So, I think that's going to be a really interesting story. Kristen's going to get all her material the first 2 hours of the day.
I actually do, usually, because something always erupts, or you're getting a reaction to something because you have all of the players in the same room. I mean, you're still going to have all of our Republican members of Congress. You're going to have all of our Republican lawmakers. The Illinois Republican Party runs the breakfast every morning. So I really – and this
is
2 months
Do you think we will have
away.
All the Republican members? I mean, you think Bruce Dold will be there? Bruce Dold.
Whoops.
Bob Dold will be there?
Sure.
I wonder.
It is a chance for them to try
Bruce
to get a little
there.
Attention.
Is Bruce going
to
go? I think Bruce should go.
They all have tight races.
The thing. Dold isn't, I
in
live
a tight
in the 10th
race.
District.
Right.
That's a swing district, and I don't see him embracing Donald Trump.
I could see him staying away from that race. I don't think that's going to help him being up at the Republican convention.
Yeah, who's the Trib going to endorse, Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump?
They're going to choose not to.
Well, we've been very firmly against Donald Trump. I mean, We will not be endorsing Donald Trump. I think we actually have said that.
Well, and the enthusiasm for Hillary Clinton is
tepid.
Well, there was no enthusiasm. There was not enough to endorse her over Bernie Sanders or vice versa at the Democratic. We had no endorsement in the Democratic.
But how does that help a voter then? I mean, not that maybe people. I don't know how much they rely on talk shows, podcasts, and editorials
podcasts
anymore.
Podcasts are very important.
But I mean, really, wouldn't the newspaper feel some obligation to lead on that, so they would have to endorse Hillary Clinton then for president, right?
Well, perhaps. I mean, I don't think that we endorsed Obama twice. I don't think the door is closed. We're just not there yet. We haven't discussed it.
I hope that Hillary doesn't take the low road on the campaign. I think that was the source of my sick stomach, Steve. I was thinking, oh, crap, 6 months of this back and forth, Trump saying insane things, and then Clinton getting in the mud, and it'll just be terrible. And I've seen her first two ads online against Donald Trump, and they're kind of funny, but I thought, she's not taking the high road right out of the gate, and I hope that she risks taking the high road and losing versus playing politics as usual to win.
It's the weirdest thing I've ever heard.
What do you mean?
That's outrageous.
I'm going to risk losing by taking the high road? That's
yeah,
not going to happen.
I do.
Look,
because
I think her surrogates and I think her Instagram accounts will do all these things with the woman card and all of that. I think you probably won't see her doing it as directly. And look, you can't, if his biggest flaws are is everything he says, you have to point out everything he says in the way that it's offensive. Someone's got to do that.
And he's going to go after her. Hard. You know, ooh, as a liar. What is that?
He was making he was making an adultery joke in West Virginia yesterday.
Was
where
he?
Where he said, you know, Hillary Clinton was involved in the Clinton administration in every way. Well, almost every way. And then he sort of left it for the crowd to start giggling. He goes, oh, I can't believe you people think that way. It's terrible. Terrible.
Well, look what he did about Ted Cruz's dad, connecting him with JFK's assassination on the day he knows he's going to win Indiana.
You know, but it was the Inquirer, so a super reliable news source. I mean,
which is run by an advocate of his, you know? I mean, but he couldn't resist it. He still had to slam dunk that even when he didn't need it. And he doesn't think that hurts him. And the amazing thing is, it kind of doesn't.
I think we'll probably have more opportunity to talk about Trump as the podcast roll on, maybe even next week. So,
talk to us real quick, Kristen. You've got to move on before you go, Kristen, because I think we're about to lose you. Right? Do you want to say anything about the quandary in Springfield and about how dysfunctional our state government continues to be?
Well, I think it's just interesting that you have supermajority Democratic House and Senate, and now for 2 or 3 years they have tried to get a graduated income tax on the ballot. The Speaker himself, Mike Madigan, has tried to get a tax surcharge for millionaires. I mean, like, tax the rich is a really popular theme, you know, among the progressives.
Yeah.
And they can't even get these out of each chamber. So I don't know if it's a sign that they're kind of slipping in Springfield.
How far down could they possibly slip? I mean, my goodness, these things are things you mentioned. They're very popular. They poll really well, not just among progressives, but among everybody. You
right,
look at the
and they
Paul
run
Simon,
promising to get it done,
and they do. And remap. You know,
that's a big one for you, Eric.
It's actually a bigger
it's a
one.
Big
for,
one for the
for,
country
for Kristen. Actually, I think more than me, but it's a big issue, and it's very popular, and they can't move these things through the General Assembly. And Kristen's right, the Democrats have almost a functional supermajority. They've got a supermajority, but it doesn't quite work. And they can't move anything that's really popular. How are they going to make the tough decisions if they can't? This is a slam. The millionaire tax polls at like 80%. And they can't move something
they
like that.
They can't do anything, Eric.
I know. Well, that's
they
what I'm
saying.
They
can't do anything.
Why
it's
don't
just
they do that
paralysis.
One? Who are they protecting on not taxing millionaires or a graduated income tax?
I mean, part of it is nobody wants to be on record for a tax increase because the politics is so poisonous that you get mailer sent out against you that you're taxed. But I also think there is a general consensus that has been building for a few years in this state that sending more money to Springfield is not helping, and they're trying to raise taxes without reforming anything, without downsizing government, without working with Rauner on some of his agenda items. So it's noticeable to me that a lot of these proposals that you would think would fly through the General Assembly are getting blocked by the Democrats.
But even things like remap, which has nothing to do with taxes. I mean, basically, the idea is they're going to change the way legislative maps are drawn by taking it out of the hands of the politicians in some way. And there were three competing proposals. One of them is the Citizens Initiative. The other ones were legislative. And they just couldn't move any of them through. They had one bill in the House, and you wrote about this or editorialized about it, about, you know, there's a crisscross. They have a bill in the House, a bill in the Senate. They all vote for it. They go, yeah, we're all behind this. And they send them over to the other chamber, and they sit
they
on
die.
Them.
Mm-hmm.
And then they can say, well, I go back to their constituents. I voted for this, even though it didn't pass. And it's just such nonsense. And it's so infuriating. And that has nothing to do with taxes. That has to do with this culture down there, this self-preservation instinct, which goes beyond the public will or the public interest. So,
But what's at risk? I mean, they've drawn the maps. They live in a blue state. They've got Donald Trump running. If there's ever going to be low risk, this would be the time of low risk, right?
Well, but the maps don't get redrawn. It wouldn't get redrawn until 2022.
But they've drawn them in their favor now, is my point.
Oh, yeah, right now, sure.
Hey, should we pat Anita Alvarez on the back for stepping aside?
Yes.
Is everybody on the same page on that one? And are we surprised that she's doing that, assigning a special prosecutor in the Laquan McDonald case?
I'm surprised she did it, but it was the right thing to do. we editorialized for this a couple months ago. I wrote a column saying she should just resign altogether because she got so thoroughly swamped in that election. The public really wants a change in that office. They shouldn't have to wait until December for it. But that was exactly
well, that's
right
like saying that the Senate shouldn't vote for President Obama's Supreme Court nominee.
No, because Obama's
still...
The
people elected her to a four-year term. She should be allowed to serve the term.
Yeah, Eric.
She should be allowed to. I mean, she should be allowed to serve. I'm saying she shouldn't. She should say, look, you know what? Kim Fox is the choice of the people.
No, her term ends in January. She's state's attorney until the next one is sworn in.
Yeah, but that's not without precedent, right? They do that sometimes, step aside for a real or perceived conflict of interest.
And she just got killed in that election. People really want a change in that office. So, I mean, I was being somewhat facetious, but you know, in suggesting that.
And defensive, I might add. let's just add one last thing,
part of my brand.
We are speaking from the greatest baseball city in the United States of America. The number one team in baseball, the Chicago Cubs, are having their best start in 109 years. And the second best team in baseball is the Chicago White Sox, tied with the Nationals for 19 wins as we record this.
You know what's funny to me is you spell June Swoon. They rhyme, but they're not spelled with the same letters.
Okay, Steve. Well, thank you for that.
Right? Come on. I mean, look, the Cubs look great. The Sox look very good.
I don't know what that means.
I don't either.
It's May. How many Mays have we been very excited and then bad things happen?
This is the Cubs' best
record.
Oh, I don't
think bad things are
going to
happen. This
is the Cubs' best record since 1907.
No, I think I'm worried more about the Sox.
Yeah,
I just think
I think the Cubs will be there. But
yeah. I'm going tonight, so I'll report back.
Do that.
Yeah.
All right. Well, good luck to the teams and good luck to you guys. Thanks for joining us. This is John Williams. Eric Zorn writes a column for the Chicago Tribune. Kristen McQuarrie does too and is an editorial writer there. And Steve Bertrand is from WGN Radio. Oh, shoot, guys. Do we have time to... Nah, skip it. We'll do our recommendations next week.
We'll see if the public leaps up and... Hey, how am I going to live my life? They didn't...
Where's my drink recipe? Kristen.
I want to recommend...
Where is that drink? You said you were going to bring
in
Frescaritas.
I will. I have all the ingredients at home. I just, you know, I'm not thinking margaritas at
8:30. Let's do that.
Ryan Kristen. Doesn't sound the same.
Next week, drink recipes as our recommendations. That's the assignment. We'll drop another podcast next Friday.
Producer for The Rascals, Kristen Decker, and engineer Bob Ferguson. You can subscribe to the Mincing Rascals podcast on iTunes or listen to it on the WGN Plus app or WGNplus.com. The Mincing Rascals is distributed by the WGN Plus Podcast Network.
You little rascal, you! You little rascal, you!